I've got the case.
While he's doing that, Representative Bundy?
That just made not balanced abortion, therefore, in Martin, so you had had no...
All you have to do is give him the citing, Representative Martin. We have a long way to go here. Representative Bundy.
Maybe Representative Porter's questions kind of got to where I was going, and I thought I understood what was going on, and now I have to ask another question. Freedom of conscience, the purpose of freedom of conscience is to allow people to refuse to do something that would conflict with their conscience, but then I heard Representative Martin say, but you have to pay the price.
Yes.
I mean, I can be a conscientious objector in the military, but I still have to serve 2 years. I can refuse to pay a portion of my income tax that would go to national defense, but I would have to face some legal consequences. In Alaska today, don't we have that right to refuse but pay the consequences?
Mr. Chairman, I would say no, because you don't have the rights here. It's on page 21. Same thing with the ballot. Individuals nor this corporation have the right, constitutional right to conscience. The court opinion, Valley Hospital has no constitutional right in this issue. It is at most a statutory right, freedom of conscience. Therefore, abortion is superior because it's conscience. It's constitutional. No way, shape, or form in any document that I've found do we see in the Constitution or in the right to privacy in that legislation that went on for 2 years, did they ever mention in any way, shape, or form the right to abortion. But our Supreme Court said they will find it right here. We will reach in and find that rights to privacy means right to abortion. They themselves discovered that for no foundation whatsoever. They could also use Section 21 of Article 1, which says the enumerated rights of the citizens, as in this document, do not prohibit the citizen from the other inalienable rights. So why our lawyers or whoever didn't go to reach into Section 21 as the basic rights of freedom of conscience? So it seems like now we must print it.
And I can understand your philosophical approach again, but I didn't understand that today in Alaska a person can refuse to pay taxes, but still have to pay the consequences.
Yes.
And then I heard you say that the Valley Hospital should have freedom of conscience. Would this extend then to corporations or mm-hmm. to organizations? Not to a person. We're talking about a hospital now.
Mr. Chairman, we did have a doctor that just recently settled with the state and with the federal government on freedom of taxes. And I forget his name, but he's well-known. Holistic doctor. You might know him. But anyway, he finally paid the price and found out that this does not permit him to refuse to pay taxes. So there's what we call the give and takes. You can find other lawyers besides myself, and not a lawyer, who can give you the other balance of what these two gentlemen would say on the history of fighting and paying the price for your free conscience.
Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much. Representative Martin, you keep pointing to the Valley Hospital case as
mm-hmm.
a reason why people can be compelled, why individuals can be compelled to perform abortions. Could you point out to me in that case where such language exists?
Well, they don't say that in that case.
Oh, okay.
Because, wait now, they're only using the hospital. No one yet, no nurse, no doctor, has yet been forced to do an abortion against their conscience. But the threat is there. Even though it says it in statutory language, that people are free from not participating in.
Hello, Representative Berkowitz.
I corresponded with the attorney who was involved in the case, and he sent me a fax, and there's just a piece of the judgment I'd like to read, and I can share it with members of the committee. And so the judgment from that case reads, quote, "Nothing in the permanent injunction granted as part of this final judgment shall require any member of the medical staff of Valley Hospital or any officer, agent, servant, or employee of Valley Hospital to participate directly in the performance of any abortion procedure if that person, for reasons of conscience or belief, objects to doing so. Given that kind of language, it seems to me that your concerns about the scope of Valley Hospital are vastly inflated.
The freedom of conscience aspect came up way before this decision on the Valley Hospital. Years ago, when the nurses actually went on strike against the two doctors who were insisting that they went into abortions, and it was such a problem in the Valley area that only as a group, when they fought against participating in abortions, that they were able to get away with it. So the doctors were able to get nurses from the other areas that would participate in the abortion process. So it had been threatened. In this case, I could say, yes, they were only talking about Valley Hospital and that institution. It was not an individual requirement yet that came up. They were only talking about the hospital must participate because the hospital received federal dollars and state dollars and so on. It's only two steps further than they may force some nurse, and you have a couple of witnesses here, nurses, that will give you a different perspective of how they've been perhaps enforced to do it.
So the hospital had to pay the consequence for accepting federal dollars?
As this case says.
Is that?
As this case says.
Yes.
Not the who?
That's a yes, isn't it?
Yes. They said because you accept it, federal monies and state monies, you must provide these services. But then we have yet the individual case, and you may hear a couple of witnesses here give their opinion on what a court, not much different than what Hitler did, when the judges and the doctors joined together and told the people, it was on the book called Life, belittle the value.
I'll be brief on this. There is
one more follow-up.
There's a very big difference between the conditions in Nazi Germany and the conditions in the United States of America. And that primary difference consists in the fact that this is a democracy where people have some degree of representation. That was not true in Nazi Germany. So I think the analogy that you're trying to make is entirely misplaced.
We're talking about freedom of conscience.
Well, Representative Croft,
refuse that right.
Yeah, I think there's a sensitivity here that probably transcends what we're talking about. Representative Croft.
I was going to make those points as well as saying that the Valley Hospital case caveats the issue of providence, as we're not dealing with one that has a religious affiliation, and that may, in fact, be a different situation. We don't know. But I guess I'm still trying to figure out, Representative Porter's and Representative Bundy's conclusion. I have the right now to violate any law I want for whatever reason I want and pay the consequences. It's really not much of a right if I have to pay the consequences. It seems to me only a significant right if I can say, I can do this and you can't punish me for it. Fire me, put me in jail, whatever it is. So would this now make me able to violate laws without paying the consequences?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Martin.
We're saying no, it would not. But we're also saying that authorities cannot, because now we want to give people the right to freedom of conscience. And if they don't have that right, then authority can tell them to do anything and be even more demanding to put them in jail and to shoot them on the spot for disobeying an order or fire them from their jobs. As long as we don't have the rights by Constitution, that's inalienable rights, then any authority can do almost anything with you. And you don't have much of a defense with the courts, especially the courts saying it's only a statutory right and it's not a constitutional right. And when you look at all the history of the other states, why is it that they give their people the freedom of conscience? Why is it with so a supreme principle of liberty when this country first began, or even before we began in the revolutions, that they were fighting for freedom of conscience against religion of other countries? That was the most important thing. And I don't think it's so, I don't know, maybe I'm not getting it across right, but it's such an inalienable right throughout the history of the liberty of man growing and becoming free that today we don't understand it.
I don't mean to shut this off. We've had some people standing by on teleconference and in the audience, and I want to get their testimony. We've hammered on them before in some other meetings. So on teleconference we have in Anchorage, Janet Oates.
Yes, Janet Oates, director of marketing and Government Relations for Providence Health System in Alaska. We are here to essentially express our support for a constitutional amendment. You've all brought up various sides to the argument, so I'm going to kind of skip through my presentation and touch on a couple of things. I would say that the Valley Hospital court ruling has brought this into focus for us. We had felt that as a private and religious hospital, our position of not doing abortions was not jeopardized. We're not quasi-public as the court ruled Valley Hospital to be. But we have been cautioned by our own attorneys that until this is brought to court, we couldn't be sure of that. The only way to assure we would be free to maintain our position would be a court ruling. Obviously, this isn't something that we're very interested in pursuing. We've got plenty of other things to do besides that. But we are concerned for other hospitals in the state who find themselves vulnerable. And we've heard just today, hospitals are having a hard time finding staff who are willing to do abortions. And so they're having to consider the option of recruiting staff, which is an expensive and time-consuming task. We also see risk in the hospitals where Providence is partners, especially with the community of Kodiak and in Seward. In Seward, we simply rent the building from the city of Seward. But in Kodiak, there are borough dollars that come in to contribute to capital expenses. We do believe that a constitutional amendment would take us back to the intent of the original legislation regarding abortion. A couple of suggestions that we would like to make regarding this particular amendment. If you're going to use this as a vehicle that we would prefer an expansion from an individual, perhaps to an individual or organization, may not be denied freedom of conscience. Second point, although we have received assurance that the broad language of HJR 5 reflects the historic U.S. constitutional perspective, there is concern in our state, filled with the independent individualists that we all are, that we might be setting ourselves up for more battles between extremist points of view that challenge our basic laws for civil order and greater good. But at the same time, I have to point out that this does reflect the Providence commitment and core values of compassion and respect. And I think we have to remember that respect goes both ways. We're asking people to respect us as we pursue the dictates of our conscience, but at the same time, we're willing to give them that same right. We're comfortable with the language of Senator Miller's proposed amendment, which specifically addresses this in the context of abortion, and we respectfully suggest that you might consider looking at that approach. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Ms. Gates?
Maybe she has some written comments.
Yes. Janet, do you have your comments in writing?
I will clean it up. I've been crossing things off as you spoke, but I'll clean it up and send it to you.
I would really appreciate that. Thank you. Also, there is Jennifer Ruttinger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jennifer Ruttinger. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU, as you may know, is a nonprofit, nonpartisan, non-governmental entity, which represents 800 members in the state of Alaska, all over the state. And I'm here to express our opposition on behalf of our membership to HJR 5. Frankly, we're baffled. If approved by the voters, would this constitutional amendment supersede state authority granted in other parts of the Constitution? For instance, would an individual's traditional belief around hunting and fishing supersede the state's management authority over fish and game granted in Article 8? Could individuals invoke this constitutional right to practice polygamy? This law, proposed amendment, is so vague that we're not sure what to make of it. I just want to reiterate what Representative Berkowitz has pointed out, that there is nothing in Valley Hospital which will force anyone affiliated with the hospital, any employee at any level, of this law, and we think it's so vague it could actually be dangerous. If this measure intends to allow exemption from state laws for those exercising their religious beliefs, the legislature would do better to craft a state Religious Freedom Restoration Act, so-called RFRA, wherein exemptions to the state's laws would be tailored much more narrowly so as to protect specifically stated religious rights. The ACLU supported the federal RFRA, which was subsequently overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court, and while things are still up in the air, while I cannot make any promises regarding future ACLU positions on hypothetical legislation, I suspect that our Alaska affiliate would be much less skeptical of a carefully crafted state law protecting specifically delineated religious rights than we are of this overly broad and vague proposal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Rittinger, are there any comments? For the rest of you out on teleconference, I'm going to close the discussion on this at 3:15, and if you want to stand by, I will take your testimony. We will start losing members of the committee, but I can take your testimony for the record, and or you can send it in so that we'll have it for the record if you have it prepared. But we do have two people in the audience that wish to testify. If you would like to come forward, Dorothy McDowell. Okay. Yes.
I was going to testify and declined to. A point came up I thought I could clarify.
All right. Come on up, Ted.
My name's Ted Dietz. I work for Representative Martin. But I'd like to speak as a citizen of Alaska. And I think the citizen should have a right to vote on whether to have a Freedom of Conscience Amendment. Because Valley Hospital thought they were protected by state law that said hospitals and people do not need to participate in abortions, that we had a conscience amendment in state law. And the Supreme Court, under the right to privacy, interpreted the right to privacy, that abortion was a superior right to our state conscience right. And by the way, the right to privacy was never intended for that purpose of abortion. It was for electronic and computer surveillance of citizens. So I think that I'd like that law in particular protected. The right to not participate in an abortion. That's a state law, and I would like to have that law protected. But the point came up that no persons are required to directly participate in abortion. Well, you got a small hospital, 36 beds, probably a fairly small hospital. What's directly? Is it the surgeon with his tools, or is it the nurse with the anesthetic? You're putting an undue moral burden on people that have to clean up afterwards. They have to remove what remains. These people are going to be forced to do that because they're not directly participating. And I think the state law would be protective for these people if we had a constitutional freedom of conscience that said, yes, this state law is protected under freedom of conscience.
Any questions of Ted? Thank you.
Now, oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. I am very sorry. I had one other point. The ruling was against Valley Hospital, in part because it was a quasi-public hospital. The court went on to say, and this may leave Providence Hospital or other hospitals that believe they're private or religious, the court went on to say, we also consider the fact that the hospital is a community hospital whose board is elected by a public membership. So we have a board made up of the community, a public membership. Superior Court noted, the public governance structure strongly favors the finding that the hospital is quasi-public. So if you have the community participating on the board, the community says, we want to exercise a right of conscience. We don't want this hospital to do abortions. They say, well, you use community people. You've got the public in there. You're quasi-public, and you're no longer covered.
Yeah. Thank you. Dorothy? You were out when I mentioned that we were going to close the talk on this in about a quarter after, so if you could make your comments
brief.
It'll
be very short.
Very good. We have another one behind you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and fellow members, you're familiar with the bill, and the only thing that I wanted to say, I guess that Alaska is the only state that has abortions, and to refuse could leave them not only unemployed, but also unemployable by taking their professional licenses. And this is what I'm really concerned about. As a registered nurse of 40 years, I encountered the situation of thinking I had to help the doctors with abortions when I went to work in the operating room here at in Juneau. I watched one and decided I could not in good conscience take part in helping with them. My husband advised me to talk to our minister as I was ready to resign. And this was a big thing for me because I had worked most of my life in the operating room. Our minister verified that I could not help with these abortions and be able to live with myself. The following may give you some idea of the conscience I would be violating. It was taking a life, and with Christ's teachings, we are to love our neighbors as ourselves and to choose life. I had taken the Hippocratic Oath when I graduated from nursing school, in which I swore to revere him, Hippocrates, as I would a parent, prescribe for the good of the patient, give no deadly drug, perform no abortions, act only for the welfare of the patient, and keep his secrets, and also to keep themselves from intentional ill-doing and seduction. Fortunately, I had heard of Alaskans for Life. I called them and they showed me the law, which stated that I did not have to participate in them and to help with abortions, and supported my decision to take this to my employer. After showing my supervisor this law, I was able to keep my job and not assist the doctors with abortions. During my employment there, some of the nurses came to me and asked how they could get out of having to help with the abortions because they were helping some of the patients have repeated abortions. In other words, indicating that they were using it as a form of birth control. They were beginning to feel guilty and no longer wanted to help with the abortions. They asked why I did not help with them, and I told them about the good conscience law. That was in effect at the time. They were thankful that they didn't have to help with them anymore. I heard one nurse ask a doctor prior to an abortion, "When are we ever going to stop doing these?" She indicated to me that she was very tired of helping with them. Shortly after that, I noticed that there was only one doctor left doing them. I hope you will join me in supporting this bill now that you realize how many lives are affected by participating in abortions. I'm deeply concerned about the welfare of good nurses and doctors who refuse to take part in abortions, thereby losing their licenses to practice as a medical care provider. I apologize.
But all right. Thank you very much, Ms. McDowell. And finally, we have Sid Heisdorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sid Heisdorf. I'm here representing Alaskans for Life. We support the goals, certainly, of HDR 5. There's been much discussion here, and I think that we agree that This amendment to the Constitution would be better off being much more specific. Certainly, we've got to avoid opening the ball game up to run the risk of someone saying they have the right to jeopardize health and safety, which we, you know, certainly do not support. It's unfortunate that we even have to get involved with trying to amend the Constitution. But I think in view of what the Alaska courts have said in that Valley Hospital case, that it's important to maybe try to preempt the next possible step, which would be to consider the requirement that personnel on a staff of a hospital may be required to participate in abortions. And I also would like to limit our concerns, my testimony here. Really, we're concerned about the life issues, abortion, infanticide, doctor-assisted suicide, euthanasia, that type of thing. So that's the kind of thing we have in mind for an amendment to the Constitution, again, to preempt any future decisions that might be in line. It staggers the imagination to think that the courts would rule that individuals had to participate, But 15 or 20 years ago, I would have told you that we would never have arrived at the position we are now, much due to what our courts have been saying about this issue. Anyone involved in the debate, abortion debate, will remember in the early 60s and 70s that the conscience clause provision was an area that basically everyone agreed with. Even those in favor of abortion agreed that that's an appropriate thing. People should not be forced to participate in something which they find very repugnant. And I think that in the Alaska bill, which was passed in 1970, surely the conscience clause was the least controversial aspect of that bill. The word individual in the statement of the proposed amendment, I'm not sure. I couldn't find any definition of individual in the Alaska Constitution, and I'm not sure whether that does cover institutions. I really do believe that a community should be able to decide for their hospital whether or not they will provide those kinds of services. And in the U.S. Constitution, as I understand, the word person does cover legal entities, and our attorneys here will have a better appreciation for that. But I would be concerned about that as well. Does the word individual cover institutions? Finally, the license to practice medicine is really a privilege. It is not a right. And it's very easy for legal entities, the state, for example, somewhere down the road to start putting pressures on people in who they will issue licenses. And because privileges are very easy to revoke. And some kind of a freedom of conscience provision dealing with these fundamental life issues in the Constitution, we strongly support. It's one area where we all can say we want the freedom to choose to do what you want to do in this area. If you don't want to participate, you shouldn't be able to. And so in the life issues, that's where we're strongly supporting this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Sid. Are there any? Yes, Mr.
Porter. A quick one, and I don't know if Sid knows the answer to this. I'm not that familiar with the Valley Hospital case. I read it in the papers some time ago, but I'm a little confused on the effect on someone's license to practice nursing or being a doctor. How would, considering the statute, how would someone's license be in jeopardy for? Or was that an issue in that case?
Mr. Chairman, no, I do not believe it's an issue right now. I'm saying that's why I use the word preemptive move on the part of the legislature to put this issue before the public in the event that the next time around, how do we know where the courts may come down on this issue? That's what we're really concerned about. For example, it's hard to get staff to participate in abortions now.
I guess I understand what you're saying, but do you understand reluctance to put something this general on the ballot, considering what might come of interpreting it, not interpreting something else?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, that's why I said I think in for our purposes, Alaskans for Life, something more specific, limited to the life issues. Yes. Otherwise, we heard the discussion here about do you have the freedom to do anything you want? Well, we have that freedom now, for sure. And but we're viewing it from the protection of the medical profession.
Any other questions? Yes.
Briefly. So as it's written now, you see the dangers of being leaving something with language this broad.
I think it's too broad. Yes, I would say that it'd be better to be more specific.
You too.
Oh, that's it.
Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Heidersdorf. We're at or past our time for this one, so I'm going to not ask for a vote. What I am going to do, though, is for the interest of the members of the committee, is to pass out a possible amendment. I'm not offering it now. It was referred to earlier in the testimony. Think about it, and if and when we bring this thing back up, this or some other kind of an amendment might be. I think people are waiting. Okay. So with that, we'll close the public testimony and debate on this particular bill, and I'm not going to require that you stay. Obviously, you probably got other commitments, but I am going to open these other two bills up because we have people standing by on teleconference. And I think it's only fair that we hear them. I just put the list away, though. There it is. Okay, for those of you who still may be around on teleconference, on 252, is there Ted Bachman and Diane Schenker in Anchorage?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we're both here.
All right. Ted, you're the first up. Would you care to give us your testimony? And I would suggest if either of you have written testimony that you send that in.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I don't believe either one of us has written testimony.
All right.
My name is Ted Bachman. I'm a captain of the Alaska State Troopers in Anchorage. I'm a staff assistant to the director. And we have worked with the sponsor of this bill for since it's the beginning of the bill, and we're quite pleased with how it's going at this point. And there are a couple of changes that we'd like to recommend. Some of them are just housekeeping changes, and I don't know if you want to take the time to bother with those at this point, or if you would like us to submit those to the sponsor.
It would probably expedite things and certainly be as handy for us if you could send those to the sponsor.
All right, thank you.
You might just tell us overview what they are, but rather than to go through any kind of detail.
Certainly. We think that there are possibly some problems in Section 1 and Subsection A2 of the proposed statute, and also in Subsection B of the statute, some possible constitutional problems that may arise out of the way that's crafted at this point, and we would have some recommended changes to the language in those particular sections. I won't go through all the minor housekeeping things. I don't think it's worthy of your time.
Will you submit those as well to the sponsor?
Yes, Mr.
Okay. Thank you.
The other section would be Section 10 of the, and I'm working off the R version, by the way, of the, which I think is going to be a proposed CS.
Okay, I'm not sure I even have it. Oh, here it is.
And in Section 10, we're going to recommend that the offense be changed from perjury to unsworn falsification.
Okay.
Again, I don't think that's worthy of going over all of the details of why at this point. And I believe the rest of the changes are minor housekeeping, one-word changes that we can submit through the sponsor.
Excellent. We appreciate that, Captain Bachman. Are there any questions from the remainder of the committee? All right. Diane Schenker. All right. You are also with the troopers?
With the Department of Public Safety.
Okay.
Hi, Diane.
Hi.
That was Representative Porter. In Mat Su, then, we have Paul Sweet.
Yes, I'm here.
Paul, would you like to enter some dialogue into the testimony? And if you have it written, if you'd send it, we'd appreciate it.
No, I don't have it written, but I'm just, for 3 years I've been trying to get information on people who have not registered, and I'm constantly told that the only reason I can't get the information is because it's privileged, private, or confidential. There's only one thing I don't understand. If these sex offenders have been through the court system and prosecuted, all their testimony and all their whatever they get for a sentence is in the court records. And yet their names are in the AFPID file that's confidential. So I don't understand how you can do both. Because I can get any information on any sex offender if it's been through the court system. So what I'm trying to prevent is if somebody goes wild out there and kills some kid or maims them or mutilates them, how are you going to explain to the parents that the only reason they didn't know that this guy was in their neighborhood is because he failed to sign up and you couldn't release the information because it's confidential?
I can commiserate with your concern. Representative Porter, would you like to answer that?
Thank you. I have some familiarity with that question. It is an anomaly of the law that is inconsistent totally, and to draw on our recent discussion about an open-ended constitutional amendment, and it is because of that open-ended constitutional amendment of privacy that we have the absent regulations that preclude giving out information that is otherwise readily available in the court system. And so you got to be careful what you ask for, because you might get it.
Well, the thing is the fact that it tells the sex offender that if he doesn't feel like signing up, nothing's going to happen to him until you catch him. And so therefore, nobody wants to come in and sign up automatically to be put on the internet, when they can just sit back and wait for you to catch up with them.
I think that the original provision of requiring the offender to return and himself or herself sign up was, and I think, an attempt to make sure that they knew where they were going to be living or something. But right now, that practice has changed, and they are being required to sign up before their release. So most recently and here in the future, that information will certainly be available in all cases.
And that's already in. The original sex offender registration is very good, just that we don't seem to be abiding by it very well. But the thing is that something is bound to happen. That's why we don't adopt the Megan Wetterling Act, the federal law, because you're going to have to abide by it in a year and a half anyway. And it eliminates privacy and all that sort of thing when it comes to sex offenders. And number two, another excuse they give me for not giving the names is they haven't been notified yet. Well, this will also eliminate that, because the federal law says that it isn't up to the state to notify the individual, it's up to himself to be aware of it. So we can eliminate two things right there real fast. The only thing we have to then come up with is some kind of a sentence that's going to make them think before they decide not to sign up. And when you just give them a Class D felony, they already got Class A, so Class E isn't going to do any good. A fine won't do any good, because even if you fine them, you probably have to chase them down to collect it. And then the following year, you're going to have to chase them all over the countryside to get them again. I think, like some states, give 2 years without a good time if they do not sign up. Now, I'm not saying you're going to throw them all in jail, but there's about 1,500 of them. But you can take the worst offenders, throw them in, and I'm quite sure if the others see that they're going to get 2 years in jail for not signing up, I'll guarantee you they'll come running through the doors. You won't have enough pens to sign them up, more than likely. And I'm looking at the 3,400 sex offenders that we have. You divide that into about 400,000 adults in this state, that comes out to about 120th person is some kind of a sex offender. But then you take 60 of those off because they're women. So that means about every 60th guy running around up here is some kind of a sex offender, and that's the ones we know about. That's not a good average. And I don't know if we're getting more up here because of our lax laws or what. But I know we have supposedly 500 in the jail system, and I can't find out whether they're repeat offenders for sex crimes, or they violated their parole, or they got other felony convictions. There doesn't seem to be any numbers on that. So that still leaves 1,000 that we're looking for. And the way I feel is that those 1,000 are probably worse offenders than the ones who've already signed up. I don't know. But I think in order for these people to understand that you're serious about it, you're going to have to make it tough on them. And I think that Wetterling Act would be a good one to adopt, because you're going to have to do it anyway, or quite a portion of it anyway. Does that make sense?
It does. Well, we have not gotten into the bill, but we did want to get your testimony on record, because you have been so patient in standing by, and we certainly thank you, Mr. Sweet.
Aye.
Did you want to make any? We have one more in-house to testify, if whichever way you want to go. Okay. Did you want to?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Susan Wibker, and I'm here because Annie Carpinetti is out sick today, and she worked on this bill, so I'm standing in. I just wanted to make a quick comment and a recommendation that I think would just close a little bit of a loophole here, and it might help address some of the caller's concerns. I can submit that in writing, or I can let you know about it now. I think, public safety talked to Representative Ryan about it this morning, so he knows that this is a recommendation that law and public safety have agreed would be a good idea to close a bit of a loophole. And that is, on line 27, subsection 2 there, I'm recommending that say by the next, well, the whole thing would read, a sex offender or child kidnapper who is physically present in the state shall register as provided in this section. The sex offender or child kidnapper shall register by the next working day following conviction for a sex offense or child kidnapping if the sex offender is not incarcerated at the time of conviction. The reason that public safety and the criminal division are recommending that is that there are cases where someone may be convicted by either coming in and pleading no contest or having a jury come back with a verdict of guilt. Their sentencing is then set 60 days later to give time for a pre-sentence report. If they're out on bail between the date of conviction and the date of sentencing, they can flee the state. And the duty to register never kicks in. So that they're convicted but unsentenced, there's no judgment, and they're not registered. I actually had that happen to me in a case that where I had a jury convict a guy. It was in May of 95. Within 48 hours, he left, probably left the country, but certainly left the state. He's never been found. There's a warrant out for his arrest. If you look in Abson now, there's not even a record of the conviction. So this would put every conviction. At the time of conviction, the duty to register would kick in and give them one day. Another way to even close that gap more securely is toward the end of the bill where it talks about all the different kinds of information that can be forwarded on pages 8 and 9. That section of the bill would allow either the court or the DA's office at the time of the conviction to give that conviction to the Department of Public Safety so that conviction could be put in the registry. And then it would be there, and if he registered, he'd be in compliance. If he fails to register, right there you've got the conviction and the failure to register out of compliance. That doesn't require an amendment in the statute. It requires just a change in practice that either the DA or the court, that's something we can work out, would immediately get that conviction information into the registry, which it looks like the statute allows. Representative Ryan has been made aware of that. The governor's child protection bill has a sex offender treatment provision, sex offender registration provision in it, and we're recommending whatever is passed that little hole be closed. So, thank you.
Very good. I appreciate that. Did you have any statement that you wanted to make?
I wish to offer, but I'm available for questions.
Okay. Well, I think what we'll do then is we'll just close this one off as well. And the last matter of business, if we can get to it quickly, is House Bill 273. And the sponsor is not here, but we may still have a Shirley Marshall at TOC. Are you still around, Shirley?
Yes, I'm here.
Bless your heart for sticking by. Did you have some statements that you wanted to make? And if so, is it in writing? We would certainly appreciate your sending it to us.
Yes, I have statements, and I am sending something in writing also.
Excellent.
I represent myself, my children, family members, and members of the TOC community. I would like to testify to the House Bill number 273, the Act relating to notification of the public concerning sex offenders, to add any health care facility be notified, and that in that health care facility, if a convicted sex offender is employed or volunteering there, the picture of a convicted sex offender be posted so the community has their own choice whether they go to that facility for their medical care or not. Number four, that the Emergency Medical Service Licensing Board consider letting a licensed EMT hold a license if that person is a convicted sex offender. Reconsider letting a licensed EMT hold a license if that person has a conviction of sex offense. and I thank you for the opportunity to voice my opinion.
Thank you very much. That number that you can fax to is 465-4316. Did you get that, Shirley?
Yes, I did. Oh. Is there anybody that would like to ask me anything about my opinion on this?
Anybody have any questions on the bill or what Ms. Marshall gave us? It doesn't appear so, Shirley. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Would the sponsor or her aide wish to make any kind of a statement? What we did was just took some people standing by, in this case, one person standing by on teleconference so that we at least wouldn't lose that. We don't plan to do anything with the bill today other than anything you may want to read into the record. We will revisit it. Uh-huh.
Maybe I'll just wait.
All right.
Until more members.
Sure. Okay.
Report to the entire committee and not just three. So. Okay,
thank you, Representative Masick.
For the record, I did instruct Representative Masick that we wouldn't be getting to her bill, and that's why she wasn't.
I understand, and we didn't think we would either, and wouldn't have except for somebody standing by on teleconference.
So your next judiciary meeting.
All right. Okay. If there are no other questions, we'll stand way late adjourned.